Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson. We're set as usual for our Sunday morning show on a very bright and chilly day, and the Chicago Bears will be at it before very long at Soldier Field. And, of course, that game will be on TV, and because of that, there'll only be one other game televised into the area, but that's going to be a great game. That'll be the game between Oakland and Miami. And Oakland's had, they haven't been consistent at all this season. Stabler's had a rather rough year as far as interceptions are concerned. And, of course, Miami and Don Shula, they're playing for a playoff berth, and they have really quite a club. Baseball has been in the news, as you know. Lee left the Boston Red Sox and went to Montreal. How they could afford to give a pitcher up, I'll never know. And the other big news was that Pete Rose signed his contract and now is a member of the Philadelphia Phillies, and they should be very, very strong with his addition. And people are still talking about baseball salaries. They just don't make any sense. When you give a player $3.5 million for 5 years, and now Parker of Pittsburgh, he wants, $10 million for 6 years, and pretty soon baseball is going to have to get some sanity back into the game because the owners have put themselves in this position. They had a chance to stop all this back in 1976 when there was some question whether the owners were willing to open up the training camps in Florida. And I believe it was Bill Veeck and Turner from Atlanta that got the commissioner talked into opening the camps. But if they hadn't opened the camps at that time, I don't think that baseball would be in the situation it is today. We know that the reserve clause had its inequities, but certainly coming out of the next contract between the owners and the Baseball Players Association, there has to come out a reserve clause of some type. Not like the other one, not like the old one. But the way things are today, the inequities are worse today on the owners than they were on the players with the old reserve clause. So baseball just can't afford to continue with this insanity because, I happened to see a great show the other night on television. Maybe many of you saw it. It was at the Kennedy Center. They honored some of the great people in the world of entertainment. Marian Anderson, for one. They honored, a great tap dancer on that show. Yeah, Fred Astaire.
Who?
Fred Astaire. Yeah, Fred Astaire. And then there were other people. A great pianist was honored on that program. And Rubenstein. These are really great people and have contributed so much, and they never made any of this kind of money. And then you give ballplayers this kind of money, it's got to be insane. Anyway, we're going to forget about baseball for today because we're going to talk football with an old friend of mine and a former great player, Hugh Galeno. He was an All-American at Stanford. Oddly enough, he never played high school ball, and we'll find out about that. And he also played with the Bears championship team in 1941 under George Halas. And Halas is a guy I really love. He's a marvelous man. He's done a lot of great things for a lot of people. And Al Halas can look at what he's looking at today, and Finks and Armstrong keep on talking about, well, the future is going to be so bright, and then play like they did last week against San Diego. Al Halas can take something like that. He's well along in years now, but he's got to age more looking at that kind of stuff. But he can't be happy because he was truly a great coach. Hugh Galeno played for him. And we'll talk about the Halas years with Hugh Galeno in just a moment. Well, boy, they are really, really diehards. But everybody's screaming about the Bears. And it'll be nice to talk with Hugh Galeno because he was with championship Bear teams, believe it or not. One in 1941 and one in 1946. He is a vice president of Hart, Schaffner & Marks, one of the great clothing companies in the world. And they really are a tremendous company. And he was formerly with Marshall Fields, another great company. What are you, as you look today at the Bears and you think about the Halas years, you must agree with me that it must be awfully, awfully rough for the old man to swallow.
Well, obviously, as I've told you before, Halas is a winner. He loves winning. And this is, as you pointed out earlier, putting some gray hairs in that poor old head. George did what the fans asked him to do. Basically, as you recall, about 5 or 6 years ago, there was great clamor. Come on, George, you've had it. Get out. So he did, and he turned the managerial ranks over to a young fellow named Jim Finks, who had a good track record up in Minneapolis, and with great hopes on the part of the Bears and also the part of the fans, we all look forward to winning seasons, which unfortunately we haven't had. Last year, there was a ray of hope when they won their last 6 in a row and got into the playoffs. This year, all of us were looking forward with great anticipation, frankly, to the playoffs. We were sure the Bears, who incidentally are playing in a rather weak division, would win. We were convinced of it. The only unknown that we had at this point was the coach. We knew what Pardee had done, but when they brought Armstrong down, people would ask me, well, what about Neil Armstrong? I said, well, I frankly don't know. The only thing I know is he was a defensive coordinator up in Minneapolis, and Jim Finks, certainly by his track record, must be picking a good coach. Well, in my opinion, the record does not substantiate what I thought was happening. I think the Bears at this point are a very poorly coached team. Any team that has as many holding penalties and pulls as many boo-boos as they have pulled during the course of this season, and any coach who sends in the type of plays that he admits he sent in, I don't think he has proven to me and to the Chicago fans that he is a top head coach. What I think the Bears need is a head coach who is offensive-oriented instead of talking about defense all the time. Now, I say on behalf of him, he's had very serious injuries to his linebacking core. I think we all know that. And that has given them a problem. But basically and fundamentally, the best defense in the world is a good offense, Bob. And when you get those points on the scoreboard, it makes it a lot easier for the defense to contain the other team. I'm sure you'll agree with that.
I have a feeling that the coaches that Finks has picked, Pardee and his present coach Armstrong, I don't think Pardee would pick, even if he could pick him. I don't think he'd pick a Shula or a Landry. I think these guys are too big and too prominent. I think Finks wants to run the whole show.
Well, he's hired to do that. Whether he is unwilling to share the publicity with a top coach like that, or conversely, whether he could get a top coach to play for him, I don't know. Because Finks is a very, very strong-willed kind of a guy. And to get a Shula, you just don't make him coach, you make him the boss. And in the case of both Pardee and Armstrong, there's absolutely no doubt who's running the show. It's Jim Finks.
What do you recall about those happy days with the Bears? Boy, let's talk about them as though they were today. Tell us a little bit about the old man George Halas's philosophy.
Well, George's philosophy was, look, as a matter of fact, he expressed it in training camp when we first came down here. He said, if any of you guys are all Americans, don't let it bother you. You got as good a chance of making the team as anybody else. The important thing is not the individual. The important thing is the team. And he said the word team means basically a bunch of people with a collective effort trying to achieve an end, which is winning. And that was exactly the way George felt. I would like to make one change if I were able to do it, which I can't. I would like to take the salaries of today's team and give them to the 41 boys. Then we'd have been a little happier. In 1946, our payoff when playing against the Giants in the Polo Grounds in front of 60,000 people was a tremendous sum of $2,342. That was for winning the World's Championship and playing against 60,000 people. Today, that would be $15,000 or $20,000. And, Bob, I could use it.
What about Luckman as a quarterback? We hear so much talk. You know, a former Bear player, not with him anymore, told a prominent writer, a good friend of mine, that the Bears have 3 quarterbacks and none of these guys can cut it in the big league.
Well, I don't know who told you that, but I'm sure that any of the fans standing out here would certainly agree with that because the Bears have 3 quarterbacks. The only thing we don't know, they have 1 quarterback they haven't tried named Vince Evans. We know the kid can run. We know he's got a strong arm. Whether he'll be a great quarterback or not, I don't know. But getting back to Luckman, the Bears have not had a great quarterback since Luckman. They've had a Lujack, who was, you know, a fair journeyman quarterback. They've had a Brown, and they've had innumerable ones, but they've never had the likes of a Luckman. And the great thing about Sid, not only was his intelligence, which he's proven in the business world since getting out of football, was the fact that he would solicit information from all of his players. Kenny Kavanaugh, any of the linemen, any of the halfbacks. If, for example, I ran in motion, he'd say, well, now who covered you on that play? And if, for example, we found out that a lineman was covering me and I could run the 109.6, it made sense for him to send me on a down pass, right? Because the linebacker couldn't cover me. Well, Sid was doing that all the time. And he'd ask the lineman, okay, could you take this guy in or can you take him out or what are the linebackers doing? And then he, in his mind, had the intelligence to call the play that would take advantage of the particular situation. In those days, we didn't have anybody up in the stands looking down and telling Sid what to do. Sid could tell them all what to do, and did from time to time, I might add.
Well, he was one of the all-time great quarterbacks. He and Otto Graham were my favorites.
Otto was a good personal friend of mine. As a matter of fact, I'm dating myself a little bit by telling this story, but when I came up to play with the All-Star game, or All-Stars, in 1941, Otto Graham was the waiter at our table. And he was a lousy waiter, but he was a super quarterback. I agree with you.
How come no high school career for you, and then you became an All-American at Stanford?
Well, I always tell the story that my father wouldn't let me play, and I also say I was scared, but that isn't true. I went to Morgan Park High School out in Beverly Hills, out south here, and I was relatively small as a youngster, and I loved to swim, and I loved to tumble, and I liked to box, and I hated the football coach. And so I did go out for all those other activities. I was on the city champion swimming team. And I did a certain amount of boxing. One of the biggest mistakes I made was boxing the football coach and beating him. And so he didn't think I'd be a football player, and I knew I didn't want to play for him. But when I went out to Stanford, the one advantage I had, I turned out for football. And they didn't know where to put me because by that point I'd ballooned up to 190 pounds and could run the 109.6. And so they figured, well, a guy that can run that fast, that big, he ought to be an end. So I was an end as a freshman. As a sophomore, I won the Pacific Coast Heavyweight Boxing Championship. And they decided, well, if he can fight and he can run, he ought to be a halfback. So that's why I became a halfback.
Well, you know, those teams on the West Coast, man alive, what they've done to the Big Ten in the last few years, and Stanford and UCLA and Southern California, that conference out there has really become something.
Yes, as a matter of fact, when I was playing out there, really, we were a good conference, but we were basically not comparable, at least in the eyes of the public, with the Big Ten or the Big Six or anything like that, except for the fact when we played the Rose Bowl, we did beat Nebraska, who at that time were theoretically national champions. But today, the Pacific Coast Conference, along with several of the Southern conferences, are really the tops in the country. There's no doubt about it. SC, in my opinion, and you could say that possibly I'm prejudiced, I think is perhaps number one in the country. They're not rated it. They're rated number three. But that's a great football team. Another example, Stanford is rated number 20th in the UPI poll. They're not even rated in the AP poll. And they're playing against Georgia, who's rated 10th or 11th. And Stanford is favored by 6 points. I don't understand. But yeah, that gives you an idea about the Cafers.
Well, I hope your old school wins that bowl game. They're playing Georgia, and they've got a great, great passing attack, and they should be able to run on Georgia. Everybody else has run all through Georgia against them. I told you, 800 yards the last two games against them on the ground.
That's incredible, and as a matter of fact, I'm sure that Stanford is pretty well aware of the fact that Georgia has a sieve-like defense against the run. As a matter of fact, I think a couple of us told them, didn't we?
Yeah.
Bob? Yeah.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is Hugh Gallineau, former Great Bear, former All-American with Stanford, and we're talking football here, as you know, with a guy who really knows the game. And we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. We're delighted to have Hugh Gallineau as our guest today. He's not in the football business anymore. He's in the clothing business. And as a vice president of Hart, Schaffner & Marks, one of the really great companies in that business. You know, we might as well talk a little. We got a lot of men standing around here. What's happening? Two-button suits, three-button suits? Is the vest coming back?
What about the double-breasted suit?
Well, gee, that's kind of a dual question, Bob, but I'll start with two-button. Yes, two-button right now is the number one selling suit, but with a vest. The great percentage of our clothing delivered for this fall was in the vested category in two-button. Double-breasted has tried for several years to make a comeback, but so far the public has not had any great enthusiasm in accepting it. Within the next 2 or 3 years, perhaps it will. But at this point, even in summer apparel, about 70% of our summer suits last year were sold with vests. And it does give a man a very, very dressed-up looking appearance, and it also gives him a place to put his pen and pencils.
I agree with you. Let's get a few of your observations on some of the figures in football. What about the other side of Woody Hayes? There must be a good side to Woody. He gets plenty of lambasting.
Well, I heard that the only one that liked Woody was his mother, and nobody likes her. But now Woody is a guy who is a dyed-in-the-wool competitor. He's one of the strongest competitors in the world, but he doesn't balance it with common sense, as far as I'm concerned. A coach that goes around punching officials and punching reporters and so forth, in my opinion, shouldn't even be coaching, Bob, because he just can't control his emotions. He has done a good job down at Ohio State, except for the fact I think he could have done a better job if he believed in a passing attack. That's my honest opinion, and I think year in and year out, he's got some of the best personnel in the world. And I think, for example, if a Schlimbecker, I don't pronounce that right, were there, he'd do a better job than Woody. And I think it's time that Woody step out, frankly.
I wonder, you really wonder about, because he does have his good qualities, and Ohio State is a great university, and boy, they've got zillions of great fans there at Ohio State. It's hard to account for anybody in his right mind having the aversion that he has to the forward pass. Just like you said about Stanford, they've got a great passing game, but the running game makes it go.
That's exactly right. And Woody, without a doubt, could have a good passing attack, but he's just the old kind time rock 'em, sock 'em, you know, 4 and 5 yards a crack. And while he wins a lot of games, I don't think they're an exciting team to watch, frankly. I'd much rather watch a wide-open team, one that, you know, will run, and but not always pass on third down either. But I like to see a diversified offense. And frankly, the truly successful teams have a diversified offense, because that's the only way you can keep the defense honest. If you have a Harper and you have a Peyton and you have a guy that can throw a ball, you could have a tremendous offense. But I'm sure that we all realize one of the Bears' weaknesses right now is a top-flight quarterback. But if you had a top-flight quarterback in there, and with ends like Golden Richards, Scott, and backs that can catch the ball the way Harper can, the way Peyton can, you'd have a diversified offense, and all you do to the team defending against you, you know, send all the guys to old men home, because they wouldn't know how to defend against that kind of an offense. And I don't know why they don't do it.
They talk so much about the defense that's being played in pro football today. What kind of a defense did you guys play with the Bears?
Well, we always said the best defense was a good offense. We always tried to outscore everybody. But basically, our defense was a little bit simpler. As you know, in those days, you had to play both ways. And so in my case, I'd play the first quarter and the third quarter, and McPhee'd play the second and the fourth. But I had the fortunate experience of playing behind a center named Bulldog Turner. And we would play a 5-man line, a 4-man line, a 6-man line, but Bulldog would call the defenses. They were not as complicated as they are today. I can recall many times when Bulldog would say, well, you cover wide, I'm going to crash this time. And he'd crash, and brother, he'd take care of him. Then other times he'd say, look, you crash, I'm going to cover wide. But it was much less complicated than it is now. Now, the thing that used to complicate it was when we played against Green Bay, who had an end named Don Hudson. Now, I don't know how many of you remember him, but Don is one of the all-time great ends that ever lived.
I sure remember him.
Yeah, and the few gray hairs you see in his head of mine are as a result of trying to cover Hudson, because you couldn't cover him with a fishing net. This guy was super. So we would always double-team an end like that. It's the only way we could handle it. But our defenses weren't nearly as sophisticated as they are today. And I think football today really is better than when I was playing, because you do have specialists now. You've got great offensive specialists. You've got great defensive specialists. I might have been a great offensive halfback, but I wasn't the greatest defensive halfback in the world. So in today's football, you can have the best of each. And now I'm certainly hoping the Bears try to do that someday, get the best of each.
In your career, did you ever have a chance to run into Lombardi?
As a matter of fact, I did, not as a player. Vince was an assistant coach when I was playing. I got to know him as an individual. And I have to tell you, this was a very, very demanding man, but he got results. And his players always said, we don't necessarily like that fellow, but we sure respect him. And he's the one that put the money in their pockets, and he's the one that helped them put the points on the scoreboard. Example, Paul Hornung came up, and this is what I used to say about Bobby Douglas, backing up a little bit. Paul Hornung came up out of Notre Dame as a quarterback, right? Lombardi said, look, kid, you'll never be a quarterback in this league, but I'll make a great halfback out of you. And what you can do, you're a good runner, and you also can run the option, which will keep the defense honest. I've always said if they had done that with Bobby Douglas, had him as a running back and let him run the option, he'd have been a great offensive threat for the Bears. But that's just a personal opinion.
So many people talk, so many players and former players talk today about the wisdom, coaching-wise, of Don Shula.
Well, I certainly don't discount that. All you have to do is look at his record. Don is just an absolutely super coach. Year in and year out, he's a contender. Now, there are times when you can have injuries or you can be a little short in certain positions, which other top coaches will take advantage of. But if I were owning a club and had the option, Don would probably be my number one choice. I think he's a super coach and a magnificent man, too.
Certainly is that. Just a really wonderful individual. Well, today the Bears are going to play Green Bay. They have the tools to do it. Maybe today they can come up with one of their good ones, make all the fans feel better.
I think the Bears are going to beat them by 40 points. Now, I don't really mean that. But all kidding aside, it's a difficult one to predict. The Packers looked very poor the other day against Tampa. They did win by scoring 17 points, but they only made 180 yards, less than half of what Tampa made. If the Bears have any pride at all, which hopefully they do have, they could absolutely cream them tomorrow.
Today, excuse me.
I got up late. No, they could cream them today. And they're starting Phipps, as you know. And undoubtedly the reason they're starting Phipps is they hope that the Packers will use a pass defense and then they can run. I don't know. But basically, the Packers are not that good a team. They're not as good as their record. The Bear-Packer rivalry extends back 50 years. And if the Bears really have any pride, they're going to murder them. And I'm going out there tomorrow, today. Going out today, and I'm going to freeze. But I'm rooting for them, and I think they're going to win.
Well, I certainly hope they do. Our guest today is Hugh Gallineau, former Stanford All-American, former great member of the Bears in the championship days. They're nice to think about. And we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest today is Hugh Gallineau, who's the vice president of Hart, Schaffner & Marks, but he's perhaps better known as a former Stanford All-American and a member of the Chicago Bear championship teams. You, in those days of the championship days with Halas, was there more or less accent on passing than you see with the pros today?
I don't think there's that much difference, at least with the Bears, because at that time we had an absolutely fantastic quarterback in Sid Luckman. And Sid could throw short, he could throw long. And we had what we considered in those days a diversified offense. On the other hand, I guess I have to backtrack a little bit. At no time when I played did we ever see a quarterback throw 57 passes in one day as Tarkington did. And I guess I would have to say there's more emphasis now because of the new defenses that have been developed by having offensive teams and defensive teams. I think it's more important that you have a running and a great passing game, the passing game.
With your background in football and your interest in football today and all the games that you watch, how do you rate the quarterbacks today? Where would Staubach rate?
Well, Staubach would be right up on top. He's slightly over the hill, maybe, but he's one of the great quarterbacks today. And Tarkington, who is 38, Tarkin's a great quarterback. He has a reputation for never winning the big one. Well, he's taken to the Super Bowl, what, two times, so he's a winning quarterback. What do you think?
Well, I think Staubach. I prefer Staubach to almost anybody. I used to think Stabler was the best, but this year he's thrown more interceptions than any year in his career.
Yeah, they've been doing a good job of rushing Stabler this year. I don't think the Oakland offensive line is as good as it was in past years, and he hasn't been getting the protection. And Stabler is not a kid either.
No.
He's not quite as mobile and shifty as he used to be. I still think they're going to be in the playoffs. That's my personal opinion. They do have to win
today. Well, they have a big game today with Miami.
Right, right. So, I don't know. It's very difficult to say who the greatest is, but I guess I would be very happy if Staubach would come to the Bears.
Yeah, I think everybody would be happy if Staubach could come to the Bears. We've enjoyed chatting with Hugh Gallino today, an old friend of ours for many, many years, and man who's got an important job with Hart Schaffner and Marks. They, as you know, are one of the really great companies. And you work for another great company, Marshall Fields.
I sure did. I spent almost 20 years there, and I worked there all the time I played with the Bears. And they were extremely kind to me, and I love them and know most of the – matter of fact, some of my contemporaries now are sort of running the company.
Thanks a lot for being with us today, and good luck to you.
Thank you, Bob. My pleasure.
Our guest today has been Hugh Gallino, All-American at Stanford. Next week, we're going to talk about the baseball meetings with Jerry Holtzman of the Chicago Sun-Times. He's been down there all week in Florida covering the baseball meetings, and he should be a very, very interesting guest. As yet, the Cubs and Sox have done nothing, but we can still be hopeful. Remember the Bears today? And also, the 3 o'clock game on the Tube should be a great game. That's Miami against Oakland. Have a happy day, and now this is Bob Ilson saying goodbye until next Sunday at our usual time.